Okay, I did get this software that goes with our book, and I really like it. And we, of course, we're already in lesson three, so that means we didn't do the first two. But when we come back, we might just kind of flip through those because they have some very interesting charts and questions that we can look at. So this is what we covered last week, but we'll just flip through quickly. It talked about, remember those distinct parallel zones that run north and south? That the big inland sea, the Mediterranean Sea, the three areas of the coastal plain, then the hill country, which is where the Israelites really wound up settling, and the Jordan Valley, and then that high table land on the other side, the desert, which is kind of the border. And then this was fill in the blank things. Remembering that they talked about no really decent harbor. It was hard for ships landing because there was no inset. See how smooth that plain is? I mean, the coast. So Dor and Joppa were the two where they could harbor. But they weren't deep harbors where you could come in and shelter from a real storm. No, they're called fair weather harbors. And then the Philistines inhabited that southern portion. The Great Sea, there were some harbors there north of Carmel, up at Akko, the plain of Akko, and Tyre and Sidon were better than anything in the southern region. Herod enlarged a city on the coast and called it Caesarea.
Okay, the Great Sea and the Mediterranean Sea are the same, right?
See,
that's what's going
That's what they're telling me here. That's not what we've always said, I don't think. But yes, because it is the Big Sea, and the others were small and easier to navigate. So yes,
this is not important, but the people who live in that country call it Caesarea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Caesarea.
After Caesar.
And also have they called Akko, A-K-K-O.
Akko?
I think it was A-K-K-O.
Oh. You mean spelled differently?
Spelled differently.
It's all important, though. That's what we're here to learn about. The coastal plain was in those three divisions we talked about. Phoenicia, way up at the top. And there was a lot of sea trade there because the harbors are better. The coastline's not so smooth. The plain of Sharon in the middle. Our book said that at times that was even a marshland. And that's where the Canaanites primarily were. And then down in Philistia, again, fertile land. You get that close to the seacoast and you're going to have fertile lands. My little boys were at the house and they were playing and I heard them say, "Big, evil, giant Philistine." It's hard to tell them to quit sword fighting when they're sword fighting a Bible story. The hill country west of the Jordan, we talked about that, how the Israelites wound up mostly in the hill country. The Lebanon mountain range, 10,000 feet above sea level, and then the anti-Lebanons. The Leontes River, which I said I had never heard of until we had this study, goes between Lebanon and the hills of Galilee. And that big gorge, which made it very, very difficult to travel in that area, and so they went around. Can you imagine looking at a 2,000-foot gorge, and you've got your feet? That's it? I mean, I might be able to get down. Getting back up the other side, I'm just going to live in the gorge. I'm done. Of course, in Galilee, we hear more about Galilee later than we do in the early part of the Bible. And then there's some pictures of present day. Let's see if Galilee. And the book talked about that being not just a valley, but a series of valleys and plains that just kind of cross that whole section between the sea and the Jordan. I also had never heard of it. Kishon River. But all y'all who said you weren't good at geography, well, that's me too, so I'm learning a lot. One of the most important sections of the land, commercially and militarily. Why? Why would it have been?
It's trade routes went through there.
The trade routes would go through it, and they could go from the ocean to the river. So they had two, you know, very important ways to travel. So whoever controlled that, if you could get control of that, you could stop the trade routes, you could stop the travel on the river, you could really control who came and went. Central Hill Country, those highest peaks, about 3,000 feet. We talked about some of those in the Ozarks, were kind of that same level. And then, and I think when we think valley, we think a deep ditch, but the way it's referred to here is a series of little valleys and plains. So it's just more like rolling hills. Mount Gilboa, Carmel, and Ebal. Then Judah, down in the southern, still pretty low country, shallow valleys and dome-like mountains. Bethlehem is 3,800 feet above the Dead Sea, 14 miles away.
Something else that Stan pointed out to me is this is really not a very big area. If you look at the scale, 40 miles, it's about 40 miles from the ocean to the Jordan River over here,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, going down, that's only about from here to what, Weatherford?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's not very far, unless you think about foot travel.
Think about it.
But it's not a big area, and there were a lot of people occupying this area when the Hebrews, the Israelites at that time, went in to take it. But they're pretty compact. You know? Like I said, Roger's always talking about how. Just think, this guy was standing on the hill yelling at this guy. That's how close they were when they were fighting.
But the thing about it being so small like that is if they had gone ahead and done what God said, they could have occupied the whole area and controlled it.
I mean, absolutely.
They could have done it.
Sure.
But they were not looking at the big picture.
Right. And not trusting.
You know, from the man's existence, we've always fought.
Right.
There's always somebody ready to go to battle.
Well, God tells us there'll always be wars and rumors of wars. And then furthest down is the Negev, kind of the southern area of the land. So that's it. That's all for this one. I think there's not much different here than what we have in our book, but sometimes it's helpful to everybody look at the same thing at the same time so we can talk about it. So, get my book out. We were finishing up on lesson 3. And I think just after the bold print on page 12, is that where y'all had us? Now, if I have glasses, I can actually see what we're talking about. So, it talks about the hills, and if I can configure this in some way where I can have it, where I can get to it, and I've got a wireless mouse, so maybe I'll use that, and then I can talk and we can look at maps while we're doing it, but I've got to get used to how I'm going to handle this. And did you know, as far as I can tell, in this whole big room we have one plug, and that's why that orange cord is in your way, but if I can find another plug anywhere, I'll do that. So we'll try to make it better for next time. This was our, how can we handle it today? The hills rise again quickly on the southern edge of Jezreel. To resume that central hill country, let's go back and see if one of these maps. We can just leave up. They're all half sized. Let's leave that one because it's got some, it's a little easier to see maybe. So Jezreel is where? That plain of Jezreel.
West of Galilee.
Kind of right there under Carmel and coming down a little bit southeasterly toward the Jordan River. But the hills, it says, rise up again. And some fairly high peaks when you consider the size of the peaks in that area. Nothing like the Rockies. You know, it's not those kinds of mountain ranges. And they're domed mountains rather than the big sharp peaks like some of ours over in the western part of the United States. The central portion of mountains was usually called the hill country of Ephraim in the Old Testament, but called Samaria in the New Testament. So let's see. Let's get one that shows Jezreel.
So Ephraim and Samaria were the same place.
I know one of these highlights.
Because that was the coastal plain. Mm-hmm. And it's got to go after the hill country.
I'm going to leave that one up. Okay. There it says. Yeah. Next one shows. You think next one shows? There we go. I knew there was one. Okay. I have to keep checking my time. Three of the best known peaks, we had pictures of them, Mount Gilboa on the edge of the Jezreel Valley, and Mount Ebal and Gershom on either side of Shechem. Can we see those? I'm going to have to buy a laser pointer. I've always wanted one. So now I have a reason that I have to get one. Who would like to read Genesis 12, 6 through 7 for me? And then I need Joshua 8, 30 through 35. Anybody have the Genesis one? Genesis 12, 6 and 7. Okay, Pat.
Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah, and the Canaanites were then in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him.
So, always before when I read that story, I went, okay, yeah, you know, that's over there. Somewhere. But now we know this is where I am. And that's where God said, this is the land.
That's the land of Canaan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had already traveled a pretty far piece.
He had.
Up and over.
He had.
The Jordan River or the river to the north and then come down.
And again, as I said last time, not knowing where he was going.
Right.
Just, Lord
and
said, go.
On my way, saying,
no. No.
This is where you go.
And not a road sign that says, you know, at the end of a trip where you get down and it says, whatever your town is, 50 miles. Yes, I can do this. He didn't have any of that. Just keep going and I'll tell you when you get there. Well, he got to Shechem and he was there. And the Lord made the promise to him. So it was here that Joshua and his army set up the monument and stake their claim to the land. Who has Joshua 8, 30 through 35? Debbie?
Now Joshua built an altar to the Lord God of Israel on Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of whole stones over which no man has wielded an iron tool. And they offered on it burnt offerings to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And there, in the presence of the children of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written. Then all Israel, with their elders and officers and judges, stood on either side of the ark before the priests, the Levites, who bore the ark of the covenant of the Lord. The stranger, as well as he who was born among them, half of them were in front of Mount Gerizim, and half of them in front of Mount Ebal. As Moses, the servant of the Lord had commanded before, that they should bless the people of Israel. And afterward, he read all the words of the law, the blessings and the cursings, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded, which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, with the women, the little ones, and the strangers who were living among them.
Thank you. Just as a sidebar, how impatient do we get when somebody's been reading for 5 minutes? How much did he read to all the people assembled? Not a word of the law of Moses did he leave out. I'm not sure our patience will keep us there for that long. That's a whole lot of reading.
I've always wondered how they heard.
That's me.
I mean, there's so many people and somebody speaking. So,
Laura?
Two things. Jim has traveled all over the world, and he's been in places like this, and we've talked about this. He said it's amazing how you'll stand one place and how way back there you can hear because of the valleys.
Valleys.
And Michelle just traveled. She went into the by the Colosseums and different things like that, or the amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it's amazing. You know, yeah. You see where they spoke, where Paul spoke in different places, and how it carries.
Yeah. Well, even today we build amphitheaters, and that round thing, concave, pulls the sound back. Mother.
We were in Ephesus, and we went to the stadium, like gathering. I don't know how many tiers they had, and the guy that was talking to us, it was kind of in a curve, and he said you can stand at the bottom of it and speak, and the person at the top can hear you.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing effect.
I think that stadium she's talking about, I think, or theater, whatever you call it, I think it held like 25,000 people.
Wow. Betty, I'm far away and I don't have on the distance glasses. I have on my reading glasses. Are Abel and Gershom on that?
Yes.
Would you point them? Do you mind? I'll get you a laser pointer too if you want to play.
Now Abel's right here. And that Garrison's here.
Okay.
Shechem's in the middle. So you
okay.
Have two mountains.
Yeah.
And half the people are on one side and half are on the other. So it kind of has that.
Mm-hmm.
Shape.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it says the western side of the Judean hill country. Now remember, that's in the southern section. I lost where I was reading. Slopes away into the foothills and the valleys of Shephelah, and then on to the plain. The Shephelah has low, chalky hills, separated by broad, pleasant valleys, it says, fertile and well-watered. Okay. Thank you. I'll get my pointer and I'll get my distance glasses. And that might make a difference. Okay. And so these are kind of a defense line, it says, with any enemy coming in from the coastal area, because they're hills, they're not full-fledged mountains, but they can be up higher. They can see what's going on. They can have a defense. If any of you have ever done any Civil War history traveling, when you go down and look at the Mississippi and see these various strongholds, where if an army got positioned there, and there's still cannons left, you know, in various places along the Mississippi, there's no way an enemy's going to get up there, because they're going to shoot them down before they manage to get a foothold. And that's what was going on here. This was a defense area because they could be up high, they could see anybody coming and take care of it before they could make a way up into the hill country.
I would think it would also slow them down.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if you're in the plains, you've got horses and chariots, you can move very quickly. If you're getting up in the foothills, especially as they're being described here, chalky and kind of broken, you're not going to make good time. You've got to slow down and be deliberate. Abrupt drop on the eastern side of the Judean hills. Bethlehem stands 3,800 feet above the Dead Sea. Where's Bethlehem? Okay. And the Dead Sea's only 14 miles away. I mean, that would be a huge distance for me to walk, but people run 26 miles on a regular basis all around this country. Crazy people, I think, but nevertheless, they do it. From the Mount of Olives to the Dead Sea, it again falls from 2680 feet above sea level to 1292 feet below sea level. That is some kind of drop. What, 3,000 feet, something like that? In less than 20 miles, the land plunges from a mountain ridge to the deepest point of land on the face of the earth. So you've got some real extremes in this very small... And we talk about Texas having all these different regions. It's got mountains, it's got coastline, it's got plains and piney woods and all these different things. Well, this country was like that. There were mountains, there were marshlands, there were plains and valleys, kind of desert areas, all in this very small geographic area. Let's see, we've got some scriptures. 1 Samuel 24:1. Anybody have that? And then we'll need Matthew 4 and 1. Laura?
24:1.
1 Samuel 24:1.
Now it happened when Saul had returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, "Take note, David is in the wilderness of En Gedi."
Okay, so where is that? That's the wilderness of Judah. Yeah, it's going to be all down in this area, and this up in these foothills, which had caves as it's plunging down to below sea level. This is where David hid when he was trying to stay away from Saul. And it was likely here, I think this was interesting, where Jesus was tempted by the devil in Matthew 4:1. Mary?
Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil.
Okay, because when it refers to the wilderness, it is almost always referring down to this area of Judea. Is it wilderness like we envision wilderness?
I had always thought of wilderness as a lot of trees and mm-hmm. You know, heavy everything. It's not.
No.
It's totally countries.
Yeah, it's deserted area. In many ways.
I was so amazed at that when I got back to PA, I think it was, told me, "Oh, you have desert over West Texas."
And sea wilderness.
Well, I had never been out there, so uh-huh. I didn't know what he was really talking about.
Now have you? Yeah. Laura?
I was going to say, well, if you look at, having studied this, like the Dead Sea, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a real, you know, things go in, they don't come out. It's called the Dead Sea for a reason. But anything by there, I mean, it's not going to flourish in that way.
Right.
So
right.
It's just very rough
yeah.
country. And for all these people, though, that lived in these lands, this is, Jim and I have talked extensively about this because I find it fascinating, but it's like, you know your home better than other people, so they use those strengths and weaknesses
oh, sure.
to their advantages. Like you were saying, going into those areas, other people, like when you were talking about running, Cheryl ran a marathon in January and she laughed. This one guy ran the whole thing barefoot. She goes, and he wasn't from Kenya. I don't know how he did it. But it was funny because certain people, they're used to that. They do it as their lifestyle
sure.
and different things. So it is different.
All you have to do is look at housing throughout history. You know, people made sod houses because that's what they had. Not because, oh boy, I think I'll build a sod house.
Right.
But if you're out on the plains and there aren't any trees, you've got to have shelter. That's what you do. Or adobe houses. Or even today, we have lots of brick houses here. You go in other parts of the country.
Wood.
Yeah.
Because we have trees.
Right. And not brick factories, which are down here. So, you know, we use what we have. Food is like that. You start looking at the various foods in different cultures and what's available and abundant is what, you know, I've tried for years, and somebody, when I say this, somebody in this class will tell me they can do it well, I'll like it and I'll try. I've tried for years to learn to eat lamb. I don't like lamb. I can't make it taste good when I cook it, and I can't go to a restaurant that makes me happy. But I know that thousands of people throughout the world subsist primarily on lamb as their protein. So I know there's got to be a way to make it taste good, but I haven't found it. And, you know, usually when I say that, somebody goes, well, I'll cook it and you'll like it. And I always try and never have yet.
They grew up with it, that's all they had.
You know, it's, it is what we...
But yes, I understand what you're saying.
And there's so many other things, just let it go.
Let it go. That's right. I don't like lamb. I don't have to like it. Thank you. But we do use what we have, and that's how people adapt to living in all these different areas. And when you see those National Geographic things or Discovery Channel things about those desert areas, I'm so fascinated by that, that people can find a way to live. We run the grocery store, and we try to buy unusual foods when we see them and try them. And we bought this, they called it a melon. It was about this big and spiny. And when you opened it, it was kind of like a pomegranate. You know, it had those pods in it. And it was way too much trouble and way too expensive, and I'll never buy another one. But it's a desert fruit. And I can well imagine that if you're traveling in the desert and you open this with all of that liquid surrounding those seeds, it would be well worth it to find that. So.
Another thing is their dress.
Dress accommodates where we live.
Because you see over in the Middle Eastern countries how covered up they are, but mm-hmm. they say that's the cooling.
Yeah, keep the sun off you and it's flowing.
That could be another argument for all the short shorts and wait. Oh, it's cool. Well,
yeah. Try covering up completely and get some shade on yourself. See how that does.
She's a cranky little eater. Anybody just give her some peanut butter and jelly.
Mother, I could not be this size and be cranky.
Well, peanut butter and jelly.
I eat lots of things, and that's the problem. If I were cranky, maybe it'd be smaller. Maybe not. It talks about the climactic explanation for the dryness, and I'm not a meteorologist, so I'm just trusting what they said here. They said the rain will appear over the hill country, but then when the clouds move this way, that because of the depth, low sea level, it just kind of sucks the moisture out of the clouds. Now my laptop's about to die because I couldn't plug it in.
That's another thing I gotta. Because we have one plug, unless somebody finds another one.
Well, we can get one of those multi plug things.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have. Yeah, we can. Okay. My cord's going to have to be longer to get over there.
Well, it can fit over the extension cord.
Oh, okay.
Fit on the
So I think there's a better way to configure all this. I just didn't have time to do it this time. Well, I hope we find the other projector. But if somebody's using it, that's fine. But I can't borrow this one every week. Mainly because I'm too lazy to go to her house every Wednesday morning before class and pick it up. Although, you know, her new laptop doesn't work with it. Maybe I'll just keep it a while. South of Hebron, the hills descend to the rolling hills of the Negev. Way down south. Remember, that's the southern border. And it says here that this name is usually applied to the semi-desert region between Beersheba and Kadesh Barnea. It was fertile enough after the winter rains. And this is like Egypt. When you read about Egypt, there's a fertile period, and you better grow your crops then, because then it goes away and you're not going to be able to grow anything. And that's true throughout the world. A lot of areas are fertile only a certain time of year, and you might get a little bit of sustenance later, but the primary growing season is going to be during one part of the year. Abraham found good water in some wells he dug on the southern edge of the arable land. Naturally, water is of prime importance in a dry region. So the town of Beersheba grew up around the wells. And we saw that. It's usually listed as the southern point of the Israelite territory. Sometimes the Israelite people controlled that far southern desert, Negev, but more often than not, it was in fighting and in flux, and other people had it. It was one of those that came and went as they're trying to protect their borders. And that's going to be true anywhere along the border. It's going to be a constant battle to maintain the land, just like it is now in that region of the world. A trade route ran along the spine of the western hill country. Remember seeing that? It just went up by the hills and then went over to Damascus at the northern end, and it was called the Way of Shur. And this route would have been busy with the Israelites, but probably not people traveling from other countries. You should have it listed, shown on your map, the Way of Shur. Sure. How do you say that? Find it here. Yeah. And then crosses the Jordan and goes up to Damascus that way. whereas the other trade routes stayed closer to the ocean. They would have been used more by other peoples because you didn't have to go inland to get there. You could just travel up. Courtney, do you have something you want to say? Don't look like you want to say something. I'll call on you. Okay, that sort of finishes where we are. I don't really think I want to start the fourth lesson because we've got some time in between. Questions or comments about this part of our study so far? I want to pick up next time. We'll have a little better organization, and I want to flip through those first couple of chapters just to show you some of the things that are on this. This has some questions that I might print out and hand to you ahead of time so we can discuss some of those. It's a pretty good program. I'd like to use it to its utmost. So, comments, things we should look at for next time, something you're not sure about and we need to figure out.
This is a very elementary question. I have never studied the geography of the Bible.
Like many of us.
And what I'm thinking, if I'm thinking correctly, most of the Bible history is located in Palestine. And
it is.
And see, it just seems so vast to me.
And it's very small.
I thought it was just...
It's a very small area. And which I find interesting, that so much of what impacts our everyday life, because it does, what happened here impacts our lives, happened in this little bitty region that probably geographically was smaller than what you would term the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex from top to bottom.
But they all were, you know, you think of driving, and they didn't do that.
No. And I don't want to walk to Plano. But
I can't imagine.
So you can envision when we get later when we're talking about Jesus' ministry, it was mostly done in Galilee. And when you see the towns, they're close together. Now, when you start thinking about Paul's journeys, you know, he went a long way.
Yeah.
And that, once you kind of have that scale down in your mind, you can see that what he did was rather extraordinary. They really did go out into all the world and preach the gospel.
And you know, as we study through, we find how often he took a ship, boat, when they could, because that was a better way of traveling for them.
And what I'm going to do now is gather up my stuff and dash out so I can sit down at Mother's house and do what I'm supposed to do there. And I'm going to turn the podium over to Miss Mary.
When will we do
that? It'll be week after. No. No, no, no.
3 weeks from
today? Three? Yeah, because Amy, and then we'll do one on generosity, and then the meeting, and then probably a second one on generosity. Maybe, maybe not. So three to 4 weeks.
So we've got a long time to work on lesson four.
We do. We do. And Debbie, I don't think you were here last week, but as I told them, nobody's going to look at your workbook but you. It's not being graded. I refuse, actually, to pick anything up and grade it. So.
Well, when you do it, it actually
it
makes it
more
clear.
Yes,
clearer.
And I was reading in the Old Testament, and I was flipping. I dug out my map and flipped the map to see. And you know, it does. It's just going to be better.
I think it will help us clarify some of the Bible events.
Mm-hmm. Makes you appreciate those that have gone before us.
Yeah.
It does.
Chris, would you unplug that and just put the cord up on the bench so we won't hear anybody?
I'm sorry for coming in late.
Which
I was
Debbie, you give that back.
Okay, now nobody leave.
And then the ones that come in late. Okay, real big.
Well, I must. I didn't want to do it, but when I was doing this, I thought, this is neat. You know, when you
just remember.
Yeah, I won't be able to remember. Maybe.
I mean, I think we actually acknowledged.
Yeah, I'll remember something.
She did, bless her heart.
I was thinking about that too.
She needs to come if she can about the next week, because it sounds like we'd be doing things other than this.
Exactly.
It's loud.
I'm not, this is not my profession. And I haven't even stood up in front of a classroom. This is nothing spectacular, but it's something with reading, and it's our grace and our letter. We all know this. So, but this is just to bring it to mind. Make us think about it a little more. Lord, today I want to thank you for your grace. Grace is simply giving something good I do not deserve. So many times I take your grace for granted. Please forgive me. Open my eyes to see your grace more clearly in my life. Lord, I ask that you take the blinders off of my spiritual eyes so that I can see all of the gifts you have so graciously given me. It is by your grace alone that I am saved from eternal punishment and have the promise that I will be with you in heaven for eternity one day. Thank you for rescuing me from my sin and from the clutches of the evil one, Satan. You died for me so that I could have life and life abundantly. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for giving me life each new day. When I wake up in the morning, empower me to focus my first thoughts on you. As I lay my head on the pillow at night, remind me of all that you have given me that day. Show me the gifts you have given me and empower me to say a simple thank you back to you. Thank you for your amazing grace. Without it, I would be in a hopeless situation. But because of your grace, I have so much to be thankful for today and every day. I love you, Lord. Every good gift and every perfect gift, which is from above, comes down from the Father of light, with whom there is no variations or shadows of turning. It's James 1:17. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. Ephesians 2:8. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill, to destroy. I have come that they may have it more abundantly. John 10:10. May grace, God's favor, and peace, which is perfect, will bring all well-being, all necessary, good all spiritual prosperity and freedom from fears and agitating passions and moral conflicts. Be multiplied to you in the full personal crisis and and correct knowledge of God and of Jesus Christ. 2 Peter 1:2. Thank you. Very simple. I read it and reread it in my heart. You know, we could all
read it every day.
Yes.